From the Ground Up, a podcast of the Alabama Extension Home Grounds team, educating you about home landscapes, gardens, and home pests.
Bree Arthur, otherwise known as Bree the Plant Lady, is a horticulturist, best-selling author, social media influencer, and contributor to the Emmy Award-winning PBS show Growing a Greener World. Her books, Foodscape Revolution and Gardening with Grains, are a new way of thinking about how we treat our landscapes and blend the two worlds of vegetable gardening and landscaping together. So, Bree, thanks for being on the podcast.
Well, thank you for having me. This is such a treat.
Well, tell me how you got here. You are all over the place. You're doing your social media, your YouTube, all the things. You're speaking engagements. You speak all around the country. Tell me how you got to where you are.
It's all because of Extension. So thank you for your service. I was introduced to horticulture from being a 4-H'er in southeastern Michigan. And without that, I would never have known that I could study horticulture in college and have a thriving career. And so I just have endless gratitude for everyone working in the Extension service, because you guys really are, you are the ultimate influencers in agriculture, and we can't live without you.
Well, I appreciate that. I hope other people feel that way. So where did you go to school at?
I studied at Purdue University. I did my major was in landscape design with a minor in entomology, and made my way down to Raleigh, North Carolina, first as an intern, and then fell in love with the southeastern climate and have been here now for the past 23 years. So I'm almost native to the South at this point. Every now and again, I catch myself saying, all y'all.
It grows on you.
So your book, Foodscape Revolution, tell me about that.
So my first book was actually, like, nothing I do is seemingly intentional. Mm-hmm. I'm just not a very well-adjusted plant enthusiast. But I had bought my first house in the subprime market back in 2006. I was working full-time as a propagator and grower at a nursery. And just wasn't earning enough money to pay my bills and also eat. So I started growing vegetables in my front yard and got into a scuffle with my homeowner association, which I had no experience with, because I grew up out in the country and never had anybody telling me what I was allowed to do with the land I was paying for. And I quickly realized that my confrontational attitude wasn't going to solve my problem. So I joined the HOA board, and it was a really humbling experience. Because, you know, I entered thinking that those people had no background in horticulture and they had no business, you know, putting out these laws. And then within the first week, I realized that they really weren't wrong. We as American vegetable gardeners have not always been trained to grow in a very aesthetically pleasing way. Sometime in our lives, we have been brainwashed into thinking that lumber is a prerequisite and that the only way you can vegetable garden is to build a boxed bed, which I now lovingly but somewhat accurately call plant coffins. And, you know, they had a point that when you rip out your landscape and you install a bunch of raised beds, and then it gets to be 1,000 degrees in the middle of July, and you go on vacation and lose interest, what you have created is an eyesore, and all of your neighbors are the ones having to deal with it. And I thought, wow, I had never actually thought about it from that perspective. And I saw example after example of what they were trying to prevent from happening, is basically making our property values less because of the way that people were gardening. And I thought back to a book that I had read when I was a teenager in 4-H. I actually did a project on edible landscaping by Rosalind Creasy. And if you're not familiar with Roz Creasy's work, you all should Google her immediately. She's written 23 books on the subject. She's absolutely brilliant. And I started taking advice from her, very literally. I tore out the raised beds and I started integrating the vegetables in with my ornamental trees, shrubs, perennials. And all of a sudden, I won Yard of the Year.
Wow.
Which came with a $500 gift certificate to a grocery store, which literally in that moment, like, solved all of my 20-something problems. Like, I cannot express how valuable that not only experience, but that gift certificate was, because I could suddenly go grocery shopping. And I felt so empowered, you know, when I was getting the threatening letters from the HOA. I really was feeling quite bad about myself and very disillusioned and, mm-hmm. you know, what am I doing with my life? And what did I do buying this house? And when this full circle moment came, I really wanted to make it my mission to share this experience with others. And it just happened to be at the same time that social media was coming mm-hmm. on and people were really getting excited about sharing information. And I'm very grateful for that formidable experience that I had in my 20s that has really allowed me to, you know, lead by example and show the power that a suburban landscape can offer. We have a lot of square footage devoted to turf grass and ornamental plantings that, you know, they serve a purpose, but we could do more with right. that space. And I want homeowners to feel engaged with the land that they're stewarding, and growing the vegetables that you like to eat is a really powerful experience to have. And certainly something that I think the next generation deserves to have when they're children, so that when they grow up, they won't be intimidated by growing plants.
Yeah, it's definitely a new way of thinking about your landscape. And there's a lot of vegetables out there that it's actually very ornamental, if you want to call it that, and pretty. And you don't realize that. And maybe it's just the stage of growth sometimes, but it is definitely a new way of thinking about how you're going to design your landscape and what you can integrate in that. So what piece of advice would you give somebody who wants to integrate more fruits and vegetables in their landscape?
Be practical.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is, and I think we all saw this in the pandemic, people went nuts
yeah.
and planted like enormous vegetable gardens and then got really overwhelmed and didn't necessarily realize how much time and energy it takes to not only cultivate the crops, but then to harvest and then prepare and preserve all the stuff that you grow. And so my recommendation always is, like, write down what you have cooked in your kitchen mm-hmm. for the last 2 weeks. And find a handful of vegetables that recur over and over again. So, like, in my case, every meal that I start, it's olive oil and onions,
mm-hmm.
garlic, potatoes,
yeah.
peppers, and find a way to grow those things in a really meaningful way. So when you're harvesting, you can skip that at the grocery store. Mm-hmm. And then you actually change your spending habits. So the time and energy that you're spending in your garden really does feel like it's meaningful. When you plant one of everything, you can't even cobble one complete meal together. I always encourage people, you know, it start small, start practical. Like I always say, garlic and potatoes will make you feel like a superhero. Tomatoes are going to hurt your feelings yep. on every single level, particularly for those of us gardening in the South, where our climate is terrible in the summertime. You know, as we're getting into fall, you have a really wonderful opportunity to lean into cool season gardening, because even though we still get cold,
right.
it's not frozen. It's not like it is in the North. And mm-hmm. you can grow food crops all winter long in the South. And that's the time of year when it's actually pleasant to be outside. So, you know, if you're a kale enthusiast, now's the time to start buying some packs of kale seeds and, mm-hmm. you know, think about broccoli and cauliflower and cabbage and, you know, some of those cool seasoned crops that don't necessarily take as much maintenance and also look really beautiful when they're integrated into your actual landscape.
There's a lot of pictures that you can find online of this. And so that if you want good ideas, you can always just, you know, look up pictures online and do image searches and just say integrate, or what would you look for?
Edible landscaping, foodscaping ideas, you know, ornamental edibles. That's like a whole new category that plant breeders mm-hmm. are actually making selections for.
Yeah.
The cover of Foodscape Revolution is like an eggplant, loud and proud. You only need but a couple of eggplants because they're very, very productive.
Right.
My local food bank has just told me to stop bringing them eggplants. and I only planted 8 this year. But, you know, they are a beautiful element. They're not super high water needs. They have good disease resistance. You know, other than flea beetles, don't really have a lot of pest problems with them. But for southern gardeners, and especially for transplants from the north, which I fully relate to, gardening in the south is like being on a different planet. And everything that you used to do is the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
And so take it in small bits, learn from Extension, join the Master Gardeners, because you really are starting from scratch. I mean, I've lived this firsthand myself, but I've also seen my parents who retired from Michigan down to South Carolina, and everything that they do is the opposite of their Michigan schedule. And it takes some getting used to.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and there have been a lot of people that have moved from up north down south, especially in Alabama. North Carolina is growing like crazy, especially where you're at in the Raleigh area. That is just blown up. Nashville, everywhere in the south is blowing up right now. So lots of people calling me as an extension agent with questions. Well, I didn't have that up there. Or, why can't this tomato grow when it's 98 degrees outside? Well, you know, let's start with something easy first, you know.
I always say tomatoes... I hate that they're the gateway into vegetable gardening, because they will give you such a complex. Like I question my ability as a horticulturalist every single year because of tomatoes. They hurt my feelings more than anything else on this planet. I still love them, but garlic,
yeah.
Garlic now. And actually, as we're filming this, garlic is a good thing to be thinking about ordering, especially if you're looking for a very specific cultivar.
Right.
And I think in your region, you're pretty similar to me. Do you do both hardneck and softneck?
I think so. I'm more of an ornamental person. So.
Yes. Well, I think in North Alabama, you can do both. But it's for people in southern Alabama, you really can only do softneck. Mm-hmm. And that's really not the garlic that grocery stores sell. So you would need to order your garlic from a seed supplier, because the hardneck garlic actually does need more cold chill than mm-hmm. what like coastal Alabama would receive.
Yeah.
And these are the nuances that make gardening in the south a bit more complicated.
Yeah, I think down in the Mobile, down near Gulf Shores, I think they're actually Zone 9 now.
Yeah.
So they're definitely, and you know, honestly, Baldwin County and Mobile County, completely different than just, 100 miles north of there. So do a little bit of research, reach out to a local extension agent. We can help you figure out those things and you know, explore Bree's website. She's got lots of, and YouTube channel. She's got lots of great info on how she does things. And, you know, there's plenty of resources out there, but reach out to someone who knows. Don't trust YouTube. And I say YouTube, you're on YouTube.
I'm always keen to point out how hyper-regional gardening is.
Right.
And like you said, the difference between Mobile and Birmingham, it could be a different planet. And it's the same thing here. What I do doesn't translate to Asheville.
Yeah.
And so this is why Extension is so incredibly valuable, because you are county by county, and those resources are, they're just so critical for being successful.
So what about someone living in a small apartment or duplex? What kind of options do they have? Do they have any options?
Oh my gosh, yes. You have endless options. Container gardening. Oh, It's actually my favorite thing in the whole world. It's container gardening. So you actually have total control over everything. You have control over the pot, over the soil that you put in it. Your only limitation is your ability to water. That's it. That's it. And if you're smart, put in a drip irrigation system, you can actually go on vacation and still keep your plants alive.
Right.
Now, I don't have a drip irrigation system. I pay a 10-year-old neighbor to take care of my pots when I'm away. But everything that you grow started in a pot, period. Mm-hmm. You know, there's nothing that can't be container grown. And my favorite container system is actually an aeroponic. So it's a hydroponic system that has a timer that turns on and off, and it's actually a tower. So in 3 square feet, I can have 24 different plants growing. The tank holds 20 gallons of water. So mm-hmm. I'm really only having to add water maybe every other week, even in the heat of the summer.
Wow.
It's a closed system, so it works really, really well. And it's definitely my highest yields of all time. Like right now, it's filled with cucumbers, and I'm harvesting about 20 cucumbers a day.
Wow.
So, you know, I highly recommend looking, especially for people with limited space, if you're really interested in growing stuff where you're getting a lot of harvest. The aeroponic systems are extremely effective. They're very, very user-friendly. They tend to come in a kit where you get everything that you need.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had my tower garden now for 12 years. I grow in it year-round, and it's hands down my favorite system to grow in. I've tried everything. I've done aquaponics and traditional hydroponics and mm-hmm. The tower remains the supreme being.
We teach a lot of bucket gardening classes here in Alabama. That's one of the things we really it's a cheap way to do it. A 5-gallon bucket you can pick up just about anywhere. Any hardware store is going to have them, and just put you some holes in there for it to drain. That's really important. But that's something that is very, very cheap. Just get you a bag of potting mix and put your seeds in there and start from there, or seedlings or whatever you have, and start with a 5-gallon bucket. That's an easy way to do it.
I love that idea. And actually, it's funny because somebody at a recent presentation called me the trash can gardener. and you know, my main goal is to make gardening as accessible to people as possible without it being super expensive, and mm-hmm. and also getting people over the fear of failure, because you're gonna fail, and that's not the worst thing that can happen to you. But you could take a trash can and don't drill drainage holes in it and grow your own rice.
Yeah.
And it's the coolest thing you'll ever do. And, you know, obviously if you have one trash can, it's not going to be enough to like never buy rice from the store. But the experience of growing it is so valuable, because once you've done that, you appreciate what you buy.
Right.
And pretty much everyone that I've ever spoken to, everyone's eaten rice, but very few people have ever actually seen it growing mm-hmm. or physically grown it themselves. And so every spring when I'm doing presentations, I'm on a rice growing mission, and I'm just like, buy a garbage can, buy a 5-gallon bucket, do this experiment, and I think your life will change for the better.
So let's talk about grains. Your second book is Gardening with Grains, and I was really fascinated with the book because I had never really dreamed of using grains in a landscape as a ornamental, but also as something that you could harvest and use.
Grains have completely changed my approach as a gardener. Someone challenged me. They gave me a pound of wheat seed to grow something of meaning. I was deep into my heirloom tomato phase at that point. I was growing like 150 different varieties of heirloom tomatoes. You know, in January, when the Baker Creek heirloom seed catalog arrives, kind of can't stop ordering the seeds, in my defense. You know, they have really good photography. But I thought, gosh, you know, you're right. My diet does not revolve around tomatoes or mm-hmm. eggplants or, you know, cucumbers. I should be growing something that, like, sustains me.
Yeah.
And I, never in my life ever had I thought about this. This was 2014, so 11 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it was this incredible experience where I ripped out 800 square feet of centipede turf in my front yard, full sun, all sand. You know, I live in a former tobacco field. Nothing fancy at all about where I live or garden. And sowed those wheat seeds, watched them grow all winter long. And I, when they started blooming, I had never seen anything more beautiful in my whole life. I would just drop to my knees. And I think I probably took 25,000 photos the first spring, because that's totally what a well-adjusted person does. And then I harvested 20 pounds of ground flour from my front yard wheat.
Wow.
And I really started thinking about what we could do, like just even in my neighborhood, if everybody did what I did, how much flour could we provide for our local bakery who's currently not getting any of their flour from North Carolina, let alone from our own community?
Yeah.
And then that got me thinking about other grains and like our society's obsession with microbreweries and, well, you can't have beer without barley. Why are we growing barley? So I started growing barley, and I started talking to my local breweries about having barley in pots on their patios so that they would have something that was demonstrative and educational. And it just kept growing and growing until I just didn't think about anything else. I've already told you several times I'm not well adjusted. Grains made me hyper not well adjusted. And beyond the fact that they're beautiful, they provide important habitat because many of these are cool season grains that are active in the winter when normal ornamental grasses are dormant.
Yeah.
They also have this super important soil improvement quality, which is so vital for gardeners in the South.
Right.
Because we have very poor soils. All of our organic matter washes away. And these grains have these deep roots that actually scavenge nutrients and draw them back up to the surface for the next round of plants to have available. If you pair them with a nitrogen-fixing legume, you know, like peas and oats, which are frequently sold together as a complete cover crop, you're then providing nitrogen for the plant material. If you harvest the seed and then mow the stalks down in place, allowing all that organic matter to decompose where you grew it, you're then adding that much more material for the microbial activity to be able to feed on, making it so that your soil is constantly having new stuff to be able to decompose in place, making your life easier as a gardener.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
Those three things together make it, why aren't we doing this as standard practice?
Yeah, absolutely. And that is something that we as extension agents always recommend. It's like if you have typical Alabama heavy clay soils, you don't add sand. Sand and clay make concrete. So add your organic matter. It is, we can't emphasize that enough, is to add organic matter. And that is a great way to do that. Let it decompose, let it break down. You'll see the benefits in a season.
Well, and it's also important in this day and age where we have a lot of herbicide present in our environment from not just farming, but, you know, the DOT spraying roadsides and, you know, under power lines. And so we have a lot of aminopyrrolid that's present now in compost that you purchase.
Yes. I have that every year. Every year.
A persistent issue where your plants look like they've been sprayed with Roundup, but in fact, it isn't. It's just that the compost that you purchased has residue that is continuing to break down.
Right.
So when you grow your own organic matter, you can be assured that you won't have persistent herbicide on your property. And then you can safely grow those summer vegetables that tend to be very sensitive to the aminopyrrolid classification of herbicide.
I get that question every spring. They see people, oh, I'll just use cow manure. Well, where did you get that cow manure? That is such an important question, because it will pass through the body of the cow, and that manure may contain those in there. And so we see a lot of herbicide damage, especially on tomatoes.
Yes.
Very, very bad on tomatoes.
And that's, as if we needed another thing to make tomatoes hard.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
But it's a discussion that we need to just start normalizing.
Yeah.
And it's not to demonize the herbicide itself. It's to educate consumers to make better decisions about what they're purchasing and have a better understanding of the system behind the compost industry. I mean, I represent a compost company who actually does now facilitate portions of Alabama.
Yeah.
And we ran into this issue, and I've become very, very educated on it. And it's a discussion that I think more people need to have. You just need to be aware of it, because there are workarounds. And actually, our solution was just implementing and integrating activated charcoal, which neutralizes the aminopyrrolidine.
Yeah.
So it's not that it's something that's impossible to overcome, but if you're not aware of the problem, then you don't know what to do. I mean, I can't tell you how many people blame their neighbors, you know, True Green subscription. Right. I'm like, I actually am not so sure that True Green is so reckless in their spraying that you're having that much drift.
Yeah.
But it might actually be in that bagged soil that you put out onto your vegetable garden.
Yeah. And again, integrating those grains into your landscape. I mean, and vegetables too. You know, there's so many things that you can do, and you've got a lot of great pictures on your social media and on your website and things. And just go there. And how can people get more information about you, how to get in touch with you if they're interested in getting you to speak?
Well, you can find me at BrieGrows.com. That's Brie like the cheese, BrieGrows.com. I'm a one-person business, so I manage my website. Hey, if you have technical advice, I'm always willing to hear it. I'm also Brie the Plant Lady on YouTube and Instagram, which is where I really am trying to put a lot of just as much practical, user-friendly information as possible. I'm one that tends to learn from watching other people, and so I've really have tried to make my YouTube videos maybe to a fault super authentic. I'm not a tech-savvy person, so I walk around with a cell phone, but what you're seeing is real. None of it's staged. And, you know, I just try to show what I'm doing in real time so that other people can then take my example and then apply it to your own gardens. And I certainly enjoy being able to share my gardening experiences with others, and always here to be your cheerleader for everybody who's interested in being a plant nerd.
Well, we certainly appreciate you joining us today. And again, if you want to reach out to her, visit her website and her social media, and I'm sure she would love to hear from you. So go ahead and follow her on that. And if you ever need any more information about anything gardening, anything landscape, you can always reach out to your local extension agent, and we appreciate you listening. Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me, Brian. This has been so much fun to catch up with you.
Thanks.
From the Ground Up is a production of the Alabama Cooperative Extension System.